you can try. I've got line of sight.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 3 of True Line of Sight. My name's Chandler. I'm here with Jaden yet again. How's it going?
Yet again. It's going all right. I'm repainting gold on this thing for the 50th time.
Yeah, that seems fair. Like a nice normal thing to do. I have been painting leather on demonettes and fiends.
Nice.
That's been my life.
Nice.
I got my demons almost done, which is great. Got to play them against world eaters, which was a lot of fun. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, do we have any news or anything we need to go over?
The Astra Militarum FAQ dropped.
Yeah, it's not very exciting.
No.
Everything in there is basically common sense. So,
yeah. And we inch ever closer to the release of the next balance update thing, which should be like the first week of April, I believe, is what I've been hearing.
Yeah, just gonna ride out another month to month and a half-ish and see what they do with everything. That's sad. I mean, balance is pretty good for the vast most part. So
yeah, it's not bad.
There's some things that could probably
get minorly tweaked. Oh, I mean, there are a few things as a Knights player that I'm just like, could all of the Knights have keywords that work, please?
Yep, yeah. The usual stuff, right? Maybe could Tyrants take stuff?
Relics?
Just any of the stuff?
Any of the stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Very cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm in charge today. That's weird. Which means we enter the chaotic mind that is me. I'm a much less structured human being than Jaden is. But I did think, and this was partly inspired by something that you wrote recently, where you got talking about secondaries, right, for custodies. And
yes.
I kind of just got thinking about secondaries in general. Secondaries are they're a very important part of the game if you're playing out of the Grand Tournament pack and using secondaries. They're a really big deal, and I think it's... It can be hard to tell sometimes how much your choice of secondaries dictated whether you won or lost a game. Because sometimes it's really easy to kind of like look at the end of a game and see what the point values and whatnot, or the point scoring at the end was, and kind of go like, oh, I should have scored higher on this one. But there's a lot of choices that were made, you know, right from the beginning, right from the start of the game, even beyond just deployment. That can drastically affect how a game actually plays out, right?
Right.
And it can be very hard to tell what's going to actually be good for you, especially in matchups that you don't know super well.
Mm-hmm.
So what I kind of wanted to go through is a little bit of kind of how secondaries work and how basically what things you need to think about when picking your secondaries and what kind of things you need to consider like that might make one secondary more interesting than another one. I don't want to necessarily go through all the faction ones, but I will kind of talk about some general themes among faction, like secondaries, because there's a fair few that are kind of similar,
right?
In kind of how they function, which is in that, you know, a lot of factions have do an action on objectives. And one that's been starting to appear is like, give up your like main faction mechanic resource for points, things like that. So there's a few different ones that kind of pop up. And I just want to talk about kind of evaluating secondaries and when you hit the table, what kind of things to think about to actually like pick your secondaries that you're going to use.
Seems legit.
Okay. So when do you actually pick your secondaries? You pick your secondaries after you choose what deployment zone you're in. Now, for a lot of people, there's one thing that isn't in Grand Tournament. That's because it's technically a player role. A lot of people will play on player place terrain, and that's fairly popular.
At least in the States, it is.
Yeah. For secondaries, you pick them after you place all of your terrain, because at that point, you have already chosen your deployment zone, but you need to get all your terrain down on the field. Normally, in a game, the rules kind of assume you like walked up to a table that had terrain on it like to a certain degree. Right.
Which would there is if you were playing War Machine.
Yeah, there is like a create the battlefield section of like setting up a game. But it's essentially like there's sort of an assumption that it's like, there's a table and it's got terrain on it. Either you put it there or somebody else did. But obviously we have the player placed terrain popularized by Frontline Gaming.
Right.
And so if you're using that, you do that, then you're going to pick your secondaries.
Yep.
On the very, very basic ground level, you pick 3 secondaries. Each of them cannot be of the same category as another secondary that you have. You have Purge the Enemy, No Mercy, No Respite, or Respite, depending on how you like to pronounce that, Warpcraft, Battlefield Supremacy, and Shadow Operations. Each one of those has, I think, just two. I don't believe... some of them have three. Warcraft.
Abhor the Witch has... Well, yeah, Warcraft has three.
Yeah, Warcraft has three. To pick from, and then you have whatever secondaries are available to you from your faction.
I believe most of those also have like three, if unless you're like a space.
It's usually like three, unless you have like sub faction specific ones, which is basically like Chaos Space Marines and Space Marine. Like, it's not a whole lot of those.
Yeah,
it's not super common, but that does complicate things a little bit because it is a lot more secondaries available to your faction, strictly speaking. So when both you and your opponent are going to pick your secondaries secretly. So one thing I want to address, there are a couple of factions, two I can think of off the top of my head, that are actually three total that have like... secondary manipulation stratagems. These aren't good.
No.
And I'm going to explain a little bit why. Firstly, generally speaking, you want to make sure as many secondaries as possible are constructed into your list design in the first place. Generally speaking, you have picked your secondaries before you ever got to the game, at least like two of them.
Yeah, definitely, sometimes two.
It better be one. Like, I have never seen a functional, like, decent list that's been thought through that didn't have at least one secondary that it was designed to be able to do very consistently. You really want to get to two. If you can do three, you're playing Necrons, like pre-nerf Necrons, right?
Or Chaos Knights.
Yeah, Chaos Knights to a certain degree, yeah. Although that's not strictly true for Chaos Knights. But
I'll I'm just mostly teasing.
Yeah, there's a few factions, and that's one of the things, is we had these really strong factions like Sororitas, right, and Necrons and things like that, where they kind of just had these secondaries that they could just, like, I don't care about anything. I just have three secondaries that I can max out, like, you know, 90% of the time. So you didn't have to worry that much about your list creation, aside from just like making sure you accounted for those a little bit. But you really want to make sure that you have some that you've kind of constructed around. So I want to talk about, I'm going to go through and talk about the ones that you can construct your list around. Because some you can, some you cannot. Because there's essentially, you can kind of think about, there's like maybe three-ish categories in that you have ones that are entirely based on your list, ones that are entirely based on your opponent's list, and then to a certain degree, ones that are based on the table and what scenario you're playing. Those are, that's probably, that doesn't come up as much, but sometimes when they have to do with actions on objectives, that pops up. So for example, Purge the Enemy is entirely your opponent's list design centric. Assassination and Bring It Down. Assassination, and this is the thing I always do. It doesn't matter what secondaries I like assume I'm going to take. One of the first questions I ask when going through secondaries is, how many characters does your list have in it? If they're like, yeah, I've got six, you might be like, this might be an assassination game. Even if they have fewer, right? There's a lot of lists these days that bring like five, and five is where you I think really need to start thinking about assassination. But then it kind of depends, right? So like Sororitas, right? Often bring a lot of characters, but they're not very aggressive. They often are kind of hiding behind things or like sitting around in lookouts or not really being targetable. And that's a situation where you kind of have to look at it and go like, these are, and this, again, this is matchup knowledge stuff. You kind of have to know how their faction works a little bit, but there's a certain degree of being like, yeah, but your characters are, the only way that I kill your characters is if I kill your whole army.
And there's others like Harlequins where it's like, I'm going to throw my troop master at you at some point.
Yeah, or like Chaos Marines are like this a lot, where it's like 90% of your characters are like very aggressively placed. Even if they're usually kind of hiding behind something, they're usually pretty far upfield. The only part where this kind of does tack into your list building a little bit is what tools you have available, right? For dealing with, so things that ignore lookout, sir, is like a really obvious one, right? If you have a way to just like carve out characters. Especially psychic powers that like splash wounds to nearby things. This is where like Chaos Demons actually can, and even Thousand Suns to a certain degree, can like kind of snipe out characters, especially very low wound, like kind of like four wound-ish characters will get just kind of carved out by like spells that do mortal wounds to things nearby, things like that. You kind of do have to think a little bit about what tools you have available. Or another one, honestly, is just, so like one example is Custodes, where it's not, you do see Custodes lists sometimes that run like a few characters that are very aggressive, but you also have to ask yourself, can I even kill them?
Right, because right? characters 99% of the time are Trajan and
a
bike captain.
Like a bike captain. Yeah, just something that's absolutely a nightmare to kill. And Custodes are a weird example because they have a weird habit of like not giving up any good secondaries just by their nature.
Oh yeah, no,
they're always like, I have Custodes two characters and like no points for no prisoners and grind them down is terrible. And you're just like, can't. And like, yeah, picking secondaries against Custodes sucks.
Yep. It's just like, hello, would you like to score 6 points or 5 points or maybe 3 points?
Yeah. So assassination, that's the kind of things that you need to be thinking about. You need to think about how many characters if they're like, I have two, you're like, okay, I'm never gonna get there with this, right?
Like, real fast, I think it's worth noting that we just mentioned something that is probably an entire thing on its own, but you should be thinking about before you even like put your list on the table, like how many points of secondaries do I give up by my list design? Because that is a big deal. Sometimes it's like, well, I'm going to give up, like, let's look at a really, really, really biased example here, which is like Thousand Sons or Grey Knights. You just give up a zillion points on a Poor the Witch.
By your nature. It's the same with Knights, right? Chaos Knights. Yeah. It's like, listen, every opponent maxes out Bring It Down unless like I steamroll them. Basically, you know, it's like you just have to kill like a chunk of my army and you've maxed out a secondary. Absolutely. And so it is a thing you should think about in reverse. And it's a little bit off the topic to a degree, but it is true. It's actually something that, because I know that, and this is a little off the rails, but for like Custodes, right? I know part of the impetus for your article was people kind of complaining about the Custodes, like Custodes not being necessarily great at secondaries.
Partially I just wanted to learn it. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. We do a lot of just writing stuff just to learn it better ourselves. But one of the things that people don't always think about with Custodes is, yeah, Custodes don't give up any secondaries. Like, you're like, hey, yeah, there's just a bunch of stuff that I just don't give up. You have to have your own proactive secondaries. I'm not going to bring any that you can use, right? Just by their nature. So another one there is, of course, Bring It Down. Bring It Down is like one of the most obvious, like, and it really just boils down to like, you look at it and you go, okay, how many vehicles do they have? One thing that's actually of note is that just because something has a lot of vehicles doesn't mean that Bring It Down is a good idea.
Yeah, because dreadnoughts only give you 1 point, which is freaking annoying.
There's a ton of vehicles that barely give you anything. And especially, like, I have an Iron Hands player I play against who's running, like, triple dreadnought and a whole bunch of kind of, like, predator-sized tanks. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, like, this looks like a Bring It Down game, but, like, you're only scoring, like, 1 to 2 points per model, and you have to kill, like, his whole army to actually max it. So is something else better, right?
Yeah, whereas like into even like Chaos Demons can bring some Monster Mash lists where it's like, well, you have three greater demons. That's 12 points. That's maybe worth it.
Yeah, yeah. Just on its own. The next one is, of course, No Mercy, No Respite. So one of these is partly list design, partly gameplay. Mm-hmm. The other one is pretty much centered around how your opponent's list is designed. No Prisoners. I think No Prisoners is really underrated and needs to be picked more often than it is. The reason for that is that there's a lot of matchups you'll go into. And so everybody kind of goes into secondaries going like, well, if this isn't scoring me at least 12 points, it's completely not worth it. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of matchups you'll go into where you just don't have another good one, and people will pick weird things instead of something like No Prisoners, where No Prisoners can often, even in armies where it's not great, it's often a pretty safe like 7 or 8 points. That doesn't mean it's your first choice at all, but it is something to think about. There's a lot of times where you'll audible into a secondary that just ends up being terrible for you, where No Prisoners would have just ended up being better.
I can see that.
That's something I do after almost every game I play, is I go, would No Prisoners have been better here? And a lot of times it is.
That's funny.
Just because you're like, oh, it just would have been easier just killing stuff, right? So No Prisoners gives you points. And the big things to note with that, of course, is that you have to make sure that the kill points you're tallying up do not include vehicles, monsters, and characters. So that's really the thing, is that the reason No Prisoners isn't always great is that a lot of lists have like a few of each of those things, or like a couple vehicles and a couple characters. And by the time you're done, you're really only like, you're like, well, if I completely table them, I get like 9 points on No Prisoners. Like, that's not great. Right.
Right.
But it is something to take into account. And there's some lists where you'll look at it and like my Chaos Marine list, I was like, yeah, I give up like 17 on no. If you can actually kill my whole army, I give up a lot of points on no prisoners.
Spamming 3-wound models turns out.
Yeah, spamming 3-wound models gets you there really, really quickly. And so that's when I have like a unit of 10 Terminators and 10 possessed and like stuff like that. Marines actually, just in general, often get there very fast, just by nature of being like a lot of relatively cheap, especially after the point drops, like 2-wound to 3-wound models.
Yeah, I mean, like one random unit of intercessors is a point on Take No Prisoners, right? Which is
So you just I think No Prisoners is one of those ones that just you need to keep in your back pocket and you need to not forget it's there. That doesn't mean you still probably won't use it most of the time. I don't think it's a great secondary, but it is it's a safe one in a lot of circumstances where you actually accidentally picked a worse one. Grind them down boils down. It's half list design, half matchup. Many lists just cannot take Grind Them Down. I would say most lists should not be taking Grind Them Down. If you have even like one random little cheap unit that's easy to kill, you probably shouldn't be taking Grind Them Down. Like, a lot of the time, you'd be amazed how much Grind Them Down is like, I killed two units and you killed one. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty rare that you're like, I killed seven units. You know, it's like, just doesn't really play out that way. It's usually very, very small quantities. So having anything like squishy that's just really easy to kill randomly is just going to make it. Like, in my Chaos Marine lists, like, a lot of my stuff was quite tanky, but I did have 2 units of 10 cultists. And I was like, I just can't really take grind because they're just going to snipe those out at some point. And if you get denied grind like two times, you're starting to fall behind. Mm-hmm. So factions that you will see grind them down, Knights, Imperial Knights and Chaos Knights, auto pick grind them down most matchups, almost all. There's only really a few where maybe you shouldn't.
You don't take it into Custodes.
I think Custodes are probably the kings of grind them down.
Yes, we are.
Just finishing off whole units of Custodes is so hard.
Yes, it is.
Even when you're winning attrition into Custodes, you often have a lot of just like one model there. And like, it's just finishing them off is a pain. Whereas Knights, like if you have the tools to kill Knights, you can kill them. Mm-hmm. Knight grind them down to me is very like, I need to try to kill three units because they'll probably kill two. You know, it's like kind of but Knights are pretty good at doing that.
Yeah.
For the most part, though, your list probably won't take grind them down. Another kind of weird thing, grind is one of those kind of funny ones too, where if you win too hard, you can
lose
points on it, which doesn't matter, but it is just of note. If you wipe out their whole army like turn two, you're like, well, I got grind, and then I guess I only got three points on grind.
I've actually found myself in Chaos Knights like deliberately not charging stuff or shooting at stuff after
like one model units and stuff where you're like,
yeah, it's like, well, I'm gonna hold on to that and next round maybe I'll attack it so that I can get grind.
The other thing that's very, and this is true of assassination as well, but it doesn't come up as much there, but grind them down is one of the ones where if you kill something with a troop or a wardog or armiger, you get a command point. So that's actually a really big benefit to if you are a faction that can take grind. For Chaos or for Knights in general, it's incredibly good. it's just a free command point like 99% of the time, because if you fail to kill a unit, I mean, you're already losing anyway. A lot of the time. Those ones are very good. Like, grind them down, very, very good when you can use it, but just you really have to account for your list design and then to a certain degree the opponent's list design. Your lists, if you're designed around it, like Knights or something like that, even like something that has a little more infantry, even like a lot of like Iron Hands lists that are just a lot of tanks, I would say they're probably slightly worse at it than like Knights or definitely Custodes, but they're better at it than most lists.
Less units your list has, the better you're going to be at it usually.
Yeah. Generally speaking. Yeah. If you're very like MSU, tons and tons of that's minimum size units, lots and lots of different activation stuff all over the place, it's just
don't even think about it
for you. Yeah. Don't go near it. yeah, just a bad idea. Warpcraft. These are... So these have a little bit of elements of both your own list design and enemy list design. And it depends on the one. First off, Abhor the Witch. The first step about Abhor the Witch is it's kind of two-parter. for one, you cannot have a Psyker and take Abhor the Witch. Mm-hmm. So one thing that you do have to think about, and this is the thing that comes up in, say, like Chaos Knights, right? Is the choice to take an Abominant or not. One of the things you have to weigh is access to Abhor the Witch.
Right.
Because it is a really good secondary when it's good. That yeah. said, it's only really good in incredibly specific matchups.
Basically Grey Knights, Thousand Suns, some Eldar builds, some yeah. Demon builds actually can, you can kind of get there. They can bring like four-ish Psykers if they want to.
Yeah, usually Demon builds, like, there are a lot of characters, mm-hmm. Psykers, whereas like Thousand Suns, you're just getting it off like all of their troops, right? Like just,
yeah, Grey Knights as well.
Every time I kill anything. Yeah, Grey Knights, like, freaking grind them down. Sorry, we're both Knight players. Playing, like, grind them down and Abhor the Witch into something like Grey Knights is just a wild ride.
I get that.
Yeah, it's so many
plus points to turn off these.
So this is a bit of a, whether or not you're deciding to take a Psyker, usually deciding to take a Psyker or not is not going to come down to whether or not you want to take Abhor the Witch, because it's a little bit of a meta pick. Mm-hmm. It just comes down to like, are Thousand Suns and Grey Knights really strong right now? And if they are, you might want to think about it, but it's not the biggest deal. It's usually pretty obvious when this is going to be a good secondary for you. If you're like, hey, look, your whole army is Psykers, like it's good. It's hard not to, even into something like Thousand Suns that are a very tough army, it's hard not to max it. Like you'll get there.
Yeah, it's really not that bad.
Yeah, because you get 2 points per unit, like.
And 3 per character, right?
Yeah, you kill like 5 units and a character and you're already at 13. Like, that's pretty good. Yeah. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that one. Psychic Interrogation is a combination of your own list design and enemy list design. Mm-hmm. And so is Warp Ritual, actually, just in different ways. Warp Ritual is one I've kind of slept on for a long time, which is funny because it's very good. But so the thing with Warp Ritual and Psychic Interrogation, first off, you need to have a Psyker, right? Obviously. Yep. This is an action that you do, a psychic action you do near the middle, or a psychic action you do when you're near-ish, it's pretty far actually, from an enemy character. Mm-hmm. So Warp Ritual, you need to make sure that you have a character that is okay being kind of near the middle. Now the thing about Warp Ritual, and part of what makes it very good, is you don't need to be there for very long. It only has 3 ticks on it.
Yep.
But it can only cap at 12 points. That's the pro versus the con, is it can't go to mm-hmm. a max 15 like some secondaries can. But it is a pretty easy 12 in a lot of the time. The only things to kind of take into account is, one, enemy access to denies is a very big deal. If they have like a 4-up or even a 5-up like deny, like on a one die stratagem or ability or something like that, the way you need to think about that is, you only have 5 rounds in a game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means you're basically on a coin. Like if you think about it on averages, which is not how this plays out, but if you think about it on averages over many games, facing into something that has a 4-up deny strat, which are becoming increasingly common, mm-hmm. You will only get 2 ticks of Warp Ritual in a given game if you are able to Warp Ritual all 5 rounds in half your mm-hmm. games, right? Because yeah. it will just fail occasionally, due to these denies, and sometimes yeah. they will just deny all of them, right? And you're just like, great. So it's a little iffy there. The other one is, even if they just have a regular deny, if you don't have any kind of bonuses or anything like that, you're just rolling against each other. Like you're technically mm-hmm. slightly advantaged because they have to beat your roll, but it's not by much. Especially if they have a reroll, like that reroll is worth it to them to stop you.
Oh yeah, scoring, all the time,
right? And so when you roll like a 5 on your psychic cast for Warp Ritual and they have to deny, it's like the worst. You're like, do I re-roll this? Like it's
yeah, and a lot of times good, you right? will.
Yeah, a lot of times you'll end up doing that. So the places to think about this, especially, you can just have it as a pocket thing. Take like my demons list. I have a Trance Weaver that would like to be buffing demonettes, but it can do Warp Ritual. And if I'm finding something that doesn't have denies, may as well, right? Like, yeah, it's a pretty easy 12 if you can keep her safe. And I've got like a Lord of Change that can go in and get like a third tick if I absolutely have to, right?
Yep.
And if you're not really facing denies, it's pretty easy to cast. Like, it's pretty good. It's a very safe secondary most of the time, as long as you're not dealing with denies. If you are concerned about denies, one thing that I did for a little while in like Thousand Suns, taking psykers that are dedicated to those secondaries that have some kind of bonuses. So this is where like it's a big investment, but if you can take something like a Lord of Change, you can have a Lord of Change at like +3 to cast. Very hard to deny actions that it does. The downside is obviously giving up a lot of spells.
Yeah, that's a big bird to be.
So Thousand Suns, not much. A thing I was doing for a little bit is taking a Zangor Enlightened, and it was my Warlord. solely because it could take a Warlord trait that lets it get 3d6 drop lowest on actions, and +1 to cast because it's a Thousand Suns Psyker. And that made it stupid consistent. This was actually a very popular thing with Tyranids as well, where you'd take, I never remember their names, but the HQ
Zoanthrope.
I don't know, man. Neurothrope, okay. Zoanthrope, Venomthrope. I don't know. They all, the one that's an HQ, can have like +2 or +3 to cast. And just using it for Warp Ritual and psychic interrogation was fairly common because it's very hard to deny, right? When you have that big of a benefit. And
yeah,
very
the averages are real,
armies,
real bad.
Yeah. Now, the downside is, of course, those 4-up deny strats don't care how big your benefit is. So you have to watch out for those. And then it's bonuses to deny are actually pretty rare. It's basically like Grey Knights have it across the board. But other than that, like, it's really uncommon. Most things have a plus to cast, not deny. Psychic interrogation is the other one. The thing about psychic interrogation, and there's the common sense one, and then there's the kind of funny thing you have to watch out for. The common sense one is obviously just that you need to have characters that are going to be out in the open enough for you to use it on. This includes obviously big supreme commanders, especially very aggressive ones like Abaddon, any of the demon primarchs or like even Gilliman. A lot of these kind of big HQs or Invocatus and world leaders. There's just a ton of kind of aggressively designed characters where like if they're not kind of up there doing something, they're not gonna be doing their function. And so psychic interrogation is very good into those where they just can't hide their characters, right? Versus take Astra Militarum, most of their characters actually do just fine hanging out behind buildings kind of near stuff, so they can actually hide really well. They won't always, because they often have a lot of characters just with the banner units and stuff like that, but they can just hide them, and if they're careful about it, they can do that. And if they just deny you psychic interrogation for 3-4 rounds, it's a bad secondary. So you kind of have to take that into account. One thing I did with that Zangor Shaman actually is I took psychic interrogation a lot, because since he rolled, he had so many benefits to roll, he got the command point from it kind of often. Which was pretty great.
One thing that you do also have to be kind of wary of if you are doing this is if they have one or two characters and they don't really care about that character surviving. I have legitimately just been I have one character. It's this Abominant. I'm running him right at you. Are you going to kill him?
Yeah.
Oh, so cool.
That was the other thing I was going to say. Now this is it's a bit of a knight's problem more than anything else, but because I don't, very few armies kind of have this issue, but sometimes you'll play against lists where their character they'll have 1 to 2 characters, but those are also the first thing you need to kill. Right. And knights will do this where they have these big characters that are really important to remove. And if you kill them turn 1 or 2, suddenly psychic interrogation isn't very good. If they don't have any characters. I have absolutely had that come up because I have one character in my knights list and he's a really good psychic interrogation target. But if you pick him for psychic interrogation, I can get really aggressive with him because I'm him dying just denies you 12 points. It's kind of a big deal, actually. It's kind of a funny one. The other thing, actually, going back to Warp Ritual just a little bit, is one thing to account for with Warp Ritual is the scenario you're playing. Basically, whether or not the center of the table is important.
Right.
Because if you're dedicating resources to standing around the middle of the table trying to protect a character that's doing Warp Ritual, it's a lot nicer if there's an objective there. That you can also be holding on to. Now, there's some you could say that if there's not an objective there, it makes it so your character is maybe a little safer. But it does mean you have resources not allocated to it. So there's kind of pros and cons. I'm not saying like never take Warp Virtual if there's not something in the middle. It's just something to think about. Is how your resources need to be allocated to keep that safe, right?
Yep.
Now, behind enemy lines, or sorry, Battlefield Supremacy in general. Battlefield Supremacy is 90% your list design. There is a degree of opponent control over this one that can tie into their list design, but it's mostly positioning. So you've got behind enemy lines and engage on all fronts. Behind enemy lines is really good, actually, especially since they buffed it so that one unit gives you 3 points. That's really strong.
Mm-hmm.
The main things to think about with behind enemy lines is, do you have access to deep strike units? These are one of the easier ones. Units that can just drop in their deployment zone and give you 3 points. keeping these units small is important. Don't take like a giant 10-man block of like drop marines and expect that that's going to easily drop into a deployment zone. Like it's difficult. Like you need to make it harder to screen, and the smaller your unit is, the harder it is to screen, turns out.
Yep.
Certain kinds of transports can be good for this. Like Astra Militarum have things like Valkyries that can actually drop after. Now admit there's some issues with aircraft these days, but with just like anything that can move very, very far, very, very fast, and then drop troops and stuff like that, it's not super common, but that can be pretty functional. Just being incredibly fast is a thing.
Like Harlequins.
Like Harlequins. Yeah, Harlequins will just get behind enemy lines because they ran at you and then ran past you. And you're like, oh, you're over there now. Or like in Chaos Marines, I was usually dropping 2 units of Warp Talons, but I often would end up with a unit of Possessed in your deployment zone as well, just because they're very fast and they just kind of end up there eventually. And they like to be very aggressive. Knights can do this sometimes. If you have very aggressive, smaller knights, you can kind of get in there. You just have to account for your base size being kind of big.
I think Imperial Knights are actually much better at this than Chaos
Imperial Knights. Imperial Knights have some incredibly fast sub-faction options.
Yep.
They can just get all up in your face very, very quickly. Behind enemy lines is one that another one you also have to account for the scenario a little bit. Some scenarios having much kind of smaller or easier to screen deployment zones than others.
The quarter deployment zones and the one that is like the two short table edges are
both. The kind of tight diagonal one is hard to, I don't know how to describe that, but yeah. So there's the one where you only have a quarter, and then there's the diagonals in general can be a little hard.
The quarters are maybe easier to do for just being fast though, because they're only like 18 inches apart.
Well, and the quarter ones, you're just closer to their deployment zone in the first place. The easiest is the long table edge ones. It's hard to screen that. You can do it with quite few things, but you have to be going very out of your way. And they might be able to deny it for a round, but if you have any kind of shooting, you can usually clean up things that are denying it. And with behind enemy lines getting the extra plus one for only a single unit being in there, it's just a really good secondary, but you do have to just like make sure it's something you're able to do. The only reason I would say so, like there's some factions that are very good at something like behind enemy lines often have another secondary that competes with it in the Battlefield Supremacy slot. Demons are a really good example. They're incredibly good at behind enemy lines, but Reality Rebels is like really good. Yeah. so you're
off. You know who's incredible at behind enemy lines? Custodians are incredible behind enemy lines.
Yeah, when you have single wound, like single model Terminators that can drop in. Yeah. Tiny little footprint, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's so hard to stop them. It's just like,
Engage on all fronts. Engage on all fronts is kind of an interesting one. It's actually pretty much fine for a lot of like very aggressive melee armies, I think. You can get into all the table quarters pretty quickly. My only thing about this one is I tend to find like, because you have to be wholly within the table quarter, you'll find that you'll just be like, you'll have like one model over the edge a lot just because that's where you needed to be.
Yeah.
I tend to find engage kind of just is awkward to do consistently, but if you're really on the ball, it's not hard to score well on.
So engage was like kind of one of the better secondaries back when I started playing at the beginning of ninth.
It was much more
largely fallen out of favor. because like secondaries that are specific to your faction are so prevalent now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, like I take like Reality Rebels and Demons, which is just like, what if engage on all fronts was better, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
What if could score 5 on this per turn?
Yeah, it's a good secondary, but it's I definitely don't see it very often, and you kind of have to. It kind of forces you to be paying attention all the time about exactly where you're standing.
Yeah.
And you'll just find that you'll have times where you're like having to be wholly within like screws with where you can go, and it can be a little bit awkward, but it's not bad. It's not bad at all. The next set is Shadow Operations. Shadow Operations, you've got Raise Banners, Raise the Banners High, and Retrieve Battlefield Data. I'm glad they've finally given up on trying to name the data one a stupid thing every single tournament pack.
Yeah, but RND was so much nicer than RBD.
It's true. I mean, I just call it, like, Retrieve Data, but I always hated trying to remember, like, Retrieve Nephilim Data, Retrieve Nachmund Data, Retrieve... Okay, so Retrieve Data to me is an incredibly list design specific one. Yeah. This is one of the most you have to have designed your list to do it properly ones I can think of. Because it has very specific requirements and requires your list to be able to do very specific things. Because specifically what it's doing is it's forcing you to have an infantry or a biker unit perform an action in each table quarter. And only one unit can do it at a time. And the other thing about it is you can only score 12 on it. And you need to get all 4 table quarters to do that.
Yeah, and if you get 2, you don't get anything, right? If you get 1, no, you don't get anything.
Yeah, you have to get 2 tallies. Now, getting 2 is pretty easy for most armies, I think. But the big thing about this one is that you just really have to be a troop to make this. You have to either be a troop or a big unit to make this like consistent. You can be like you can be like units of like 6 or 7. So if you're running like drop troops, like take like Warp Talons or something like that that aren't troops, you can make it work. It's just that it turns into kind of a point investment that gets a little bit gnarly. And so the factions that really like to retrieve data are ones that just do this really easily by their nature. Harlequins were a pretty reasonable example. They like, this is just the easiest shit on the planet for them, right? Like sometimes you're kind of giving up a unit to do it, but like it's free points. Like it's so
although easy. Although I found that Harlequins typically take like behind enemy lines and then their faction specific one.
Sure. Yeah.
And since this is not this, but
Not necessarily accounting for faction specific ones. Something I see a lot out of like Space Marines is taking a unit of the Infiltrators. Yep. And they can put them into reserves with a stratagem. So you'll basically like turn 1, do the action somewhere like 1/2 your deployment zone or whatever. Turn 2, drop them in and do it in a weird table quarter. And the enemy can try to kill them, but it's like very awkward. Like killing a unit of 5 Space Marines sitting on the outer edge of a table quarter is like kind of annoying. It's like not the easiest thing to do unless you have very specific tools.
Doesn't this complete at end of turn or am I misremembering?
It does. Yeah.
Okay.
It does.
Yeah.
And so that's what you like. So you have to kill them to try to stop them from doing it later is what you're trying to do.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Cause they'll then drop back into reserves again and then really late game drop into another quarter. This is kind of this is a thing I deal with a lot.
Eldar will also just take 2 units of Rangers and be like, well, these are in your deployment zone and other places now. And it's like, oh, good.
Yeah, this is actually one that Demons could do extremely well. The only reason it doesn't come up a whole ton is that they're kind of forced to take like big units that need to be killing things. But like you could actually probably get 3 on this really. You could get 4 on this pretty easily with Demons just because they just like doesn't having a lot of Demon Strike helps a lot.
Doesn't this also compete pretty hard with the Spoilers of Reality though, which is like pretty darn good?
Spoilers of Reality is kind of a weird one because it doesn't complete at the end of your turn.
Yeah.
It's got some serious pros and cons, but it is good. So it just depends. I think it depends a little bit on the scenario and opponent's list design. If they're very aggressive, like I played into World Eaters, I was like, I can't get this. The only reason I got the action done twice is that I went first.
Right.
So I was like, but yeah, Retrieve Data is one of those ones you have to kind of account for. Having access to some deep strike troops or very, very fast troops, helps a lot. and that's not super common necessarily.
Not really, no.
Yeah. And then some factions like knights just can't do it. Just literally, it's not an option. Because they're not infantry. Raised banners is a fascinating one, and it's probably the one I have had the hardest time fully wrapping my head around how good it is.
So actually, I can talk a bit about that because I am playing the Raised Banners faction.
Yeah, I know. Custodes loves Raised Banners,
Yeah, so as mostly playing knights, well, 100% playing knights before Custodes, like, banners always looked like a really stupid one to me, because people would, like, spend all this time doing it, and then I would just go take the objective, and it's like, well, congratulations, you've done nothing now.
Yeah, raised banners is not great into knights a lot of the time.
So,
good at denying objectives from you.
Yeah, so raised banners is really good if you have a couple of like criteria. One, if you've got some fast units that you don't mind just doing an action for turn, or if you've got a way to action and do something else. Like Custodes have a Katah that lets them shoot an action or advance an action or both if you're playing in the right shield host. So that can be absolutely bananasly strong there. The other thing is that you need to be able to keep those objectives, which is something you want to do anyway, but it's doubly important because the banner goes away if you lose control of it. So you got to be willing to just like park stuff in places and leave it there.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's a daunting pile of things. But the other thing is that banners actually has some pretty incredible scoring potential, even though you can't score a turn one because you do score it at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So if you go second and say you score like 2-2-2-3, so you've scored 9. If you put up a fourth one on your last turn, you'll get to score another 4 on that. So then you've scored 13 on it, which is on the upper end of the like high average kind of thing. And it's not unrealistic to go like 3-3-2-2-3-3, like get close, like 14 points is very doable. I've done it a few times. I've seen it done.
The other thing that opened my eyes to it a little bit, I recently had a pretty rough matchup with my Chaos Knights into Minotaurs. That's Space Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Dopest Space Wolf army I have ever seen, by the way. But anyway, he actually had them. It's a slight off thing, but he, you know, do you know what Minotaurs are like? And
no,
you know anything about them? I had never heard of them. This is a lore thing I didn't know about. They're Space Wolves, but they look like Spartan soldiers. Like they're in like gold armor with like big circle shields and stuff. And like this guy had it fully converted. It was fucking dope. It was so cool.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was like all gold with like the round shields, and all the thunder hammers were spears and stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, off topic, but anyway, I denied. He took raised banners, and so this is a thing to think about. Is basically just like, do you think you can table them in like 3 rounds? Because I denied banners repeatedly. He scored. He had 3 points on it, round 3, and I think he ended the game with like 12. Like because he killed my whole army and just did the action on basically every objective for 2-4 rounds, and suddenly it was like, well, there's just 10 more points like off, right off the bat. Yeah, and you can score on it very fast all of a sudden if you get the right situation. This is actually one that I think demons could do quite well as well. It's just, again, it's a shadow operation and they have another option that's quite good as well, so it just depends. Depends a little bit. That is the baseline secondaries for Arcs of Omen. I want to talk a little bit about some kind of general archetypes of, and you can jump in on this a little because you'll know some I don't, but some kind of general archetypes of like faction secondaries that I've seen. Many of them just fit into very similar categories to some of the ones we already talked about, right? So take something like raise banners or retrieve data. If your faction has another like do an action in a location kind of a thing, it's probably quite similar. The main things to just account for with those is like, does it complete at the end of my turn, or does it complete at the in my next command phase? Because if it does that, it's probably less good.
Yeah, it is almost a requirement, or it has to score a ton of points, like 4 at minimum, to justify completing at the beginning of the next turn.
It's got to be very, very good. Some of them are just stand in locations, so they become very, very similar to something like engage on front or behind enemy lines. I already mentioned things like Reality Rebels. Just account for those where you've got them. Some of them are very similar. Take like World Eaters right now. have just multiple secondaries that are basically just murder everything, right? And that's kind of getting mm-hmm. the same round as like grind them down or no prisoners, something like that.
Yep.
There are a couple that are a little bit unique. One of them, and this is only the only two, there's only two factions I can think of right off the top of my head that have it. I don't know if there's any others, but is in Sororitas and World Eaters, which is that they have a faction mechanic that gets them a resource that they gain, and that they can gain secondaries by spending that resource instead mm-hmm. of using it on something more useful, right? The thing about these, and I simultaneously think these are amazing and I hate them, because I want to play with my fun faction mechanics, not give them up for secondary points.
Right.
But they are also completely undeniable secondary points, right? Like,
well, and it's also interesting, like, it should be interesting game design because you're having to choose now what your resource is doing.
Yeah, but because at the end of the day,
necessarily
yeah,
and I don't know if they've necessarily gotten there yet, especially the World Leaders ones feel kind of like you're drowning in this resource almost. So yeah, but yeah,
you're drowning in it, and what you're spending it on isn't necessarily the most important thing ever,
right? Yeah,
like they're good, but it's, whereas like Sororitas, so the thing that I don't like about the Sororitas one is that it's completely out of your hands, right? Mm-hmm. Is because how many points you get is based on the value of the die you use,
which you roll
and need to do. Yeah, so I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to get on this one. Like, it's probably kind of okay. Like, on average, it's probably an all right secondary, but I'd just rather be using the dice for something interesting from a fun perspective, right? But from a competitive perspective, like, especially like the World Eaters one, it's just the easiest. Like, you can max it. If you get tabled, you'll max it. points for it by your own army dying. So, like, it's pretty hard not to get a lot of points on that one. You just kind of have to give up a bit of a resource. And I'm curious how much like that secondary's existence played into how the point scaling for, I wonder if they almost use it as a balancing mechanic for Blood Tithe. I have no idea. But anyway, so that's one to take into account. These are usually like, that's the only two I can think of off the top of my head. There might be another one. I'm not sure. I don't have like a super great knowledge of everybody's secondary objectives. Mm-hmm. There's some weird ones. This will go into the wild card weird category. One example of this is like, there's the Votan one that's like, get points, but then you lose points if there's still grudge tokens on the table. There's some bizarre ones.
There's a lot of variations on Stranglehold, which is an old secondary that everybody could take, which is basically if you control more of the objectives at the end of the turn, you get some points. These tend to be extremely good.
They tend to be, just because they you have so much like agency on whether or not they complete, right?
You just and also you want to be doing the thing anyway. You want to be taking those objectives. So it's like, I wanted to do this anyway. I guess I will get more points for it.
A good example it's not quite like Stranglehold, but like there's a reason that the Long War is very popular in Chaos Marines. Because it's like, oh, killing them units that are on objectives and taking objectives I didn't control earlier, that sounds like playing the game, right? Like, you're like, I'm just doing the thing I'm supposed to do.
Even some missions will have extra points that you get for doing those things too. Like the one that I played yesterday evening, I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but you get an extra 2 points if you control a new objective, and another point or 2 points if you kill the unit on an objective, and you get an extra point if you did both of those things. So it's like, well, cool. Some factions just get to score like 8 or 9 points off this now.
Yeah, very, very easily. Another one is like Oaths of Moment in Marines, where it's literally just like, be near the middle of the table and don't fail morale. You know, it's just, you're like, okay, cool. There's also the chapter, the codex one that I can't remember the name of off the top of my head, but it's just like, kill stuff with weapons, get points, huzzah.
The Iron Hands one?
Well, it's not Iron Hands specific, it's a Space Marine one. It's just Iron Hands are very good at it. It's codex, Jesus, it's gonna bug me now. It's because I know what it's called, but my brain is like not allowing me to remember what it's called. It's called Codex Warfare. That's it. It's just killing stuff with whatever weapon of the doctrine you're in at the moment.
Right.
Stuff like that, where like these are ones obviously you just have to kind of take into account. And then there's a lot of just bizarre ones. Tyranids have some incredibly strange ones. I'm not going to go too much into those, where it's like kill things with a very specific kind of unit. Like,
yeah, some objectives or some secondaries will set up more objective markers on the table, and then people have to fight over those for like,
so like those are virtually all bad from my experience.
The Harlequins one is pretty good from what I
do. Harlequins, I've never seen
Harlequins. Yeah, they've got they've got where like you get to place one within I think 8 or 9 of the center, and then one in your half of the table, and your opponent gets to place one, and you get some points for controlling two and more points for controlling more of them.
Interesting.
It's not terrible. It's not incredible, but it's not awful.
Iron Warriors have this really silly one where you're like, yeah, you place extra objectives and you have to like, but you're like, your opponent mostly places them, and then you have to go put like bombs on them. It's incredibly awkward. Yeah.
Oh, there's also an entire category of secondaries that's like, pick an objective, it's special, you get more points.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, Sororitas are kind of notorious for that one, yep. Where they just kind of like, if you control this objective, you just get points, enjoy.
Salamanders have it as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, there's quite a few
out there like that. Obviously, there's a lot of secondaries in the game. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be able to make like a comprehensive rundown on all of them, but that's at least kind of the primary ones, and then a few things to think about with regards to what your kind of faction specific ones are. It's a really important part of the game. It's one of those things that I think it's actually an incredibly difficult skill that a lot of people just don't think about, is being able to consistently like pick good secondaries.
Yeah.
Usually you'll have those like two that you built your army around, but just like that third one can just kill you sometimes. Like you pick the wrong one and you're down, you know, 12 points or whatever, because you did not pick the right one for that particular matchup. So that's about most of what I got. In that, I want to give, I guess, thanks for hanging out with us for a little while, everybody. And if you want to support a bunch of the stuff that we do, you can go to patreon.com/LineOfSightWarGaming, right? That's it?
Mm-hmm.
My brain? That's it. Yeah, I did it. And you can go to LineOfSightWarGaming.com. You can see all of the articles, things like that we post on there. You, of course, have our YouTube channel, which is Line of Sight as well, which has all of the stuff on YouTube, including this cast, which goes up on there. Is there anything else? My brain's blank.
Facebook page?
Yeah, Facebook page. Check us out on Facebook, Line of Sight. That's kind of the easiest way to see everything we've got going on. We post a lot of just random like pictures and updates on there as well. So that's kind of our most conversational, I guess.
Yeah. And then join our Discord. Yeah. Also,
yeah, which is actually the most conversational, because that's literally what Discord is for.
Yeah,
you can hop on our Discord as well, which we've got in the show notes, the link to that, and you can check that out. And that's about it. That's all I got. Woo. Thanks, everybody. We'll see y'all next time.
Bye.
Come to play, stay to slay. Back and forth, come and go, I'll tell you what you wanna know. How to set your trap, watch as I attack. Try to play the game, try to stay sane, working that brain, hope it's not in vain. You can try to play it safely, but there's no way you can break. Time to get ready, the foe is coming steady, and we'll give it all we've got. Keeping it light, but holding on tight, it doesn't matter if we win or not. Gotta give it your all, even if you fall. We came to fight a fair fight, but now there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. You can try. I've got Line of Sight. You come and talk and smack, well we ain't like that. Talk is cheap, hard work and skill is where it's at. Now when your men wilt, you best try not to tilt. And if you beat me, there's no need to feel guilty. I don't play to say. Safely, and there's no one.
Time to get ready. The foe is coming steady, and we'll give it all we've got. Keeping it light, but holding on tight. It doesn't matter if we win or not. Gotta give it your all, even if you fall. We came to fight a fair fight, but now there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. You can try, but I've got line of sight. Did you think you could get away this time? How cute. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. You can't try. I've got line of sight.